Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Fat Muscle Project podcast. I'm John Gorman, one of your hosts today. We've got Lisa Franz in the house. Lisa, what's going on? How are you?
I am awesome. I'm super excited that we're picking this back up. We had a little bit of a break there for a few weeks because of some travel and some awesome conferences, but I'm excited to speak to you today.
Yeah, today is going to be fun. It feels like it's been 6 months because you and I have just been traveling all over and we can catch people up real quick. But going forward, as people listen to this one, we're pretty much locked loaded in the trenches and it's going to be nonstop action from here on out. So we had between the two of us, you and I were at the Fat Muscle Project Academy seminar and customer appreciation event, and that was January. And then we both went to the Hybrid Health Summit. We're going to do kind of a deep dive and behind the scenes episode, catching people up on conferences and why you should go to conferences. And if you ever want to speak, what it takes and things of that nature. And then I just got back last night from my trip to Nashville to Iron House Gym to the charity event. We raised over $5,000 for kids with brittle bone disease. And I believe Vince's Hybrid Health Summit raised like over $75,000. So lots of charity going into these talks here lately. But as people know, when you're traveling, when you're speaking, when you're setting up booths, when you're doing all these things that you and I are doing, man, you're just tired. Like you're tired. And one of the things we just had to take a break from was the podcast because we wanted to put quality content out. And that's what we have today.
I
So
think
I'm
it's
ready.
very suitable that we're talking about cortisol because obviously you
Yes.
mentioned it's tiring, it's stress. So we're going to be talking about exactly that today.
Yeah, your flights, especially. So I'm a driver. I would drive. I drove 2 days to Florida, was down there 3 or 4 days presenting, and then 2 days home. And I was like, I'm never doing that again because I was so tired by the time I got back. And then I thought about it, and you're flying like what, 17 hours or something?
Oh, my flight back home from Missouri was a nightmare. I kid you not. It took me 36, no, not 36 hours. Sorry, that's a lie. It took me 28 hours to get back because of
What's
the
the
weather.
difference? That's the same
And
to me.
instead of it being two flights, it turned into four because of the weather.
Oh,
And like
man.
Dallas just couldn't deal with the minus degrees or the snow or whatever. But I made it home. So,
Well, here's the thing. You don't know it, but after you spoke at our event, and you did a great job. Everyone talked about how much they loved your speaking, just you in general, how they love it on the podcast. We all have a secret behind the scenes. We're going to get you to move to the United States. You just don't know it yet. So you don't have to worry about those
Okay,
20.
cool. Well, I'm excited about that plan. Sounds good. I'm glad that I'm the only one who is not in on it yet, but cool.
You'll know when we'll get you here, but you've got our show notes for today, and this is going to be a really good topic. Why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Yeah, so as we said, today is going to be about cortisol. We initially thought about how deep we wanted to go within this, but I agree. I think we should totally start from sort of scratch. Yes, of course, everyone has kind of heard about cortisol, but still, I think it's very misunderstood. So why don't you get us going by just simply telling us how you got interested in cortisol as a coach, but maybe also personally?
Yeah. So, if we really think about it from a coaching standpoint or even an athlete standpoint, for me back in the day when I would compete or I had aspirations to keep competing, I thought about cortisol. And to me, cortisol and the word stress went hand in hand. Like that was my basic elementary like understanding of what it was. And you knew things like prep were stressful and dieting was stressful because one, you felt terrible. You got a little cranky, and you just knew the stresses were there on your body because you're eating less than your body needs, and you're just under recovered. And you knew kind of what it was, but we didn't understand what it did to the body. We didn't understand what it did to hormone levels and things like testosterone and thyroid hormone and progesterone and like all those things. And we're going to get into those. So I started closely paying attention to it probably 2011 is when I really had to understand it. Because at the end of the day, what I started to notice was I had these clients that just weren't making the progress that they should be making. I would check their diet. I knew a lot of them very closely as friends. And I would see something is blocking what's going on. I've got their calories pretty low, their cardio's, decently high. And they're just not getting the last 5 pounds off the way that they should be. Something is wrong. And that's when I start to understand, okay, there's an issue. There's something is causing their body to fight back. And they were stuck in a constant fight or flight. So that's when I really started to pay attention. And then when I started to understand how it affected the hormones in the body, I would say around 2016, 17, actually 2015, when I wrote my first book, Metabolic Capacity and Reverse Dieting, I had started to notice what cortisol did to thyroid hormone and how it slowed the thyroid down, and how you made less thyroid hormones, so your metabolism slowed down. And that's when I really started to pay attention. But things like testosterone later, that, I would say 2016, 2017.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because at first, of course, most coaches start off with, hey, calories in, calories out is everything, and of course, everyone is going to agree that that is the basis. But if we don't eventually go a little bit deeper, we're going to get stuck, as you mentioned. And you also said, okay, you got interested in more hormones, so that already tells us cortisol is a steroid hormone. And I think what's often nowadays misunderstood about cortisol is that it has such a bad rep now overall. Like people hear cortisol, and or at least I immediately have like, is it bad? Is something bad going on? Would you say that overall, is it bad, or what is it even there for, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, well, cortisol is needed. Like, we have to have it. It's there. It's a hormone that helps your body deal with stressors. So, I mean, it's super, super important. What's bad is chronically elevated cortisol from chronically elevated stress. That's enemy number one. I've been saying that for over 5, 6, 7 years now. Chronically elevated cortisol is enemy number one. It's the thing that messes everything up. But cortisol in and of itself is not a bad thing. Like, cortisol is important for fat loss. It's important for dealing with stresses. And when your cortisol gets really low, at some point we'll go into an adrenal fatigue episode and we'll talk about that. You don't want cortisol low all the time. Like, and you can put yourself in that state by, well, we'll talk about it on the adrenal insufficiency episode that we do at some point. So cortisol is not bad. It's chronically elevated cortisol that really starts to hurt hormones, and we're going to talk about each one, and we'll do a deep dive on that.
Yeah, I think it really is. You highlighted the most important thing, that it is the accumulation of the
Yes.
stressors that is going to be bad. So one individual, we need cortisol in order to adapt for something. Otherwise, if we don't set a training stressor where our body doesn't see the need to increase muscle mass, if we don't see or if we don't have a stressor in the sense of every now and then challenging ourselves in other situations, we're not going to adapt. But as you said, the accumulation is really what is harmful to the body. And I think the tricky thing there is that, well, number one, some things seem like fun and we don't recognize them as stressors. So, for instance, going back to like me and my CrossFit days, it was so much fun. I loved it. I loved laying after the workout, destroyed on the floor, bathing in my sweat, thinking, oh my gosh, I've given it my all. And I thought I was on this adrenaline high, thinking, this is so much fun. How can that be bad for me? Or then, you might go out and have a nice, fun night of dancing and drinking and cutting your sleep short. And then the next day, you have to go to work and you have to do your chores and stuff like that. So, all this is fun. And yet it is perceived as a stressor on our body. And then on the other hand, also just some things that we want to manage but are di more difficult to manage, like those work stressors, like emotional stressors, like you might have a fight with your partner, and that paired up with lack of sleep and within a calorie deficit and all that. So it's just like recognizing what is our accumulative stress load. And I know some people have like a term for it, like the allostenic load or whatever. And I mean we can get all technical about that, but in the end, how someone is feeling, monitoring their biofeedback, and that is probably one of the most important things when it comes to that. Would you say that like monitoring the biofeedback as a coach with your client is a good strategy?
I believe it is. And a lot of people like to use, a stress bucket's probably the easiest, most elementary way that I can explain it that I've heard other people use before. I didn't come up with that term, but I'm going to steal it. It was probably Jason Theobald I heard talk about the first time. It makes sense. We all have a stress bucket, and you can fill that up, and it should have some stress in it, right? So after you train, that's cortisol is going to be up. Like during training, cortisol is going to be up. It's going to be up. That's a normal thing. But when you start to accumulate all these things, so if you're in a caloric, let's talk about the things that spike cortisol, and then we'll talk about what leads to chronically elevated cortisol, because the word chronic means all the time. Acute is like a sharp rise or just a gradual rise or whatever, and then it's back down. It's not staying high. So something like training, you'll see an acute response. Cortisol go up, then it'll go back down. It's normal. It's what we want. But all these things start to add up, and then you see chronically elevated cortisol. So think about in our world, for most people listening, this is physique enhancement related, right? A lot of people are dieting. You know, at some point through the year, somebody's dieting. So now you're in a caloric deficit. Well, what's that mean? That means that you're not taking in enough calories to recover. So slowly you're starting to you're under recovered. And the longer you diet, the longer you stay under recovered. Well, guess what? Cortisol is going to stay higher because you're under recovered. So being in a caloric deficit, that's the main thing that people need to always. But guess what? That's part of dieting. But boom, we just put that in our stress bucket. Most people are training, you know, five days a week on average. For people listening here, they're probably training about 5 days a week on average. Most of us are 5 days. Four is fine. Six for some people is fine. But now all of a sudden, that stress on your body, you add that to your stress bucket. Caffeine. A lot of people love, listen, in our world, drink caffeine, get all loaded up, get all wired up. Let's go hit the gym. Boom, boom, boom. Go, go, go. That's a stressor. And by the way, they're doing a lot more than just pre-workout, right? So like they're waking up having coffee, they're starting to crash around a little bit after lunch, or having more coffee, they're having pre-workout before they hit the gym. There's a stressor on your CNS. Okay, now you add that to the stress bucket. But now think about this. Now your sleep's a little bit less because you've had a lot of caffeine. So if that's you, and now your sleep's less, now you're under recovered, cortisol stays higher. You add that to your stress bucket. And you brought up the other ones that people don't think about, and you were dead on with this, Lisa, outside stress. So like if you're in a tough relationship or you're going through a split up or a divorce or what have you got a job that you hate, you've got a boss that's just breathing that you don't get along with, and you I've got clients all the time, like they don't sleep for shit because their job stresses them out. There's another stress on top of that. And I can think of all these other little ones that we all do. I've got clients that are very neurotic. That can be a good thing or a bad thing, but they want to, they are ring, they're tracking their steps, they're tracking their macros, they're tracking their reps, they're tracking their water intake, like they're track, 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 track. And if one little thing is off, they stress the hell out. For some people, it's a good thing. It keeps them on track. For some people, too much tracking stresses them out. So you see what I'm saying? And I noticed that it's more type A people that, I mean, this is proven, more type A people that are control freaks, that are very type A and driven, like those are the people that you usually see the most stress. So now think about the stress bucket. It's overflowing, and the bucket and stress is now out all over the floor in front of us, right? Because it's overflowing. It's chronically elevated. So that hopefully that snapshot gives people an idea of like, okay, this, let me look at my stress bucket. Let me think of all the things that are going into that. And now I can, together, you and I can start to explain, okay, so what's that going to do to hormones? What's that going to do for fat loss and muscle gain? I wanted people to understand what goes into it first.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only other thing I would throw in there, and that's something that's unfortunately less manageable, is just environmental toxins or whatever. I mean,
Yes.
we can't neglect that influences us also, you know, depending on where you live or how much you expose yourself, even just to like negative atmosphere around you, negative people around you. But of course, then also things like pesticides and all these chemicals and stuff. And as I said, yeah, unfortunately, sometimes some of those things are not that manageable, but that's even more important than that we, you know, try to tweak the ones that we can manage as best as possible.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I see next in the notes, you know, we're going to talk about the individuals that we see with the biggest issues. You and I both see it as coaches with our clients all the time. From my standpoint, I already talked about type A people. Females to me are most susceptible. They're not as resilient when it comes to having chronically elevated cortisol levels. I think that's because there's so many systems in the body for a female from the hormonal side that have to go up and down and shift because they've got ovulation and they've got their cycle, and you've got all these very intricate systems where guys, ours is pretty elementary compared to a female. So we see a lot of these systems and the hormonal axis get thrown off from chronically elevated cortisol. So I would say that the people I see that suffer the most are females, especially as they get later in age. Then next one I would say guys. Now these are folks that are natural. They're not an HRT. They're not taking any, anabolics on the side. That's not really our jam here on the show. But if you want to do that, it's fine. Totally get it. We got a lot of friends that go that route. But natural females are first. Natural guys are second. Then I see assisted females are third, and then assisted guys are last. So they're least affected by it. Go
Yeah,
ahead.
I would rather than from a perspective of like what kind of individuals in the sense of more like what habits do the most prone people have. So again, I'd agree totally with the women. Adding on, just because that adds more stress, like women or people in general that are so busy throughout the day, they hardly eat throughout the day, they don't take the time to eat throughout the day, maybe even not eating after their meal or whatever. And then, of course, you get back home at night, and either you're super hungry, eating everything inside, or your body's so messed up that you're not even hungry. And I think that is so such an issue for many reasons, because but one of the main being that every time we eat, we blunt cortisol, and even more so, every time we eat carbs, we blunt cortisol. So we assist our body with the stress management. And I think, if we're just, I'm too busy, I only have time for coffee in the morning. And then maybe at lunch, you just maybe grab an apple. And then in the afternoon, another coffee. And then you come home and then you eat. And I find that that is probably one of the habits that just exacerbates everything even more.
I will go on record right now and say this as a coach. The clients that I have the hardest time getting in shape are always the most stressed out, the most scattered, the ones that are always rushing the most. And they're the ones that wake up, they're running out the door, their food's not packed for the day, they're having coffee, they're skipping breakfast, they're rush, 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 hurry, get to work. And this is going to sound really mean. I don't mean it that way, but their life's just kind of a mess because they're unorganized and they're scattered and they're stress type individuals. So when I get someone like that that hires me, if they can't even get to work on time, or if they're always rushing, 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 and they're not meal prepping, they're not going to stick to their diet. They're not going to get to the gym regularly. Like all these things happen, but those are stressed individuals. And that's what we're talking about on the show. And that's, they've got all these stresses adding up and they're cortisol is chronically high, and it just makes getting them results really, really hard.
Exactly. Yeah, getting those kind of people into more of a looking ahead, planning ahead, maybe even utilizing a meal prep services if needed. But I mean, sometimes or usually it's not even the, oh, I don't have food available. It's like literally they don't make time to eat, even if it's just a shake or something like that. But I think the second quote unquote habit I would say that some of the people more prone to that have is being super low carb, like especially with the women long term. Of course, granted at the end of a diet, et cetera, your carbs are going to be low, but we're just talking like long term. They're like terrified of carbs, not wanting to eat any carbs at all. And in my experience, it's just such a good way to help the body deal with your stress better, especially at night, because then it also means you're going to sleep better and so many other facets. I don't know if that's something you see as well.
It certainly is. Cortisol is going to be higher on things like a low carb or ketogenic diet just because of the lack of carbohydrates. And that's just what it is. There's all these different ways that work. Intermittent fasting has all these different properties to it and advantages to it and disadvantages. It's almost like you have to take the positives and negatives, and you have to weigh each type of way to approach your diet, right? Ketogenic, intermittent fasting, whatever. Because if you're fasting for 16 hours, especially someone's trying to train in that fast window, which we don't recommend, but you're going without food, your stress is going to stay higher, your cortisol is going to stay higher. It's just not ideal. But if that's the only way someone can stick to a plan, because they can eat most of their food in the evenings, and that's what they can do, is the risk and the reward ratio better, then okay, I'm not going to argue with someone for that. So
Yes, no, that's a really good point. Just before we move on to the next one, which is important also, I just wanted to say that also people that generally engage in more like HIIT type-y thing training
Yes.
or whatever, that would be the third sort of habit I'd throw in there, just because in comparison to like, let's say, you know, an argument with your partner, or sitting in traffic for half an hour, or if we throw in that 1 hour CrossFit class, it's overall going to do a lot more quote unquote cortisol damage than those other two things, for instance. So yeah, that just tends to be the third sort of trend in my
And that's,
experience.
yeah, we should talk about training for a minute before we go on, because everyone here listening, we all train, right? And we all train at various degrees. So the two training scenarios, I'll say two and then a third, that I find that are the hardest on people, and then I have to end up fixing their hormones, or eventually they end up on TRT or HRT or whatever. Number one are people that do CrossFit more than 5 days a week. That's just such a brutally hard way to train on your body. There's so many reasons why I am not a fan of it, and I'm not going to shit on CrossFitters because I have a lot of friends that do it, but it's so brutally hard on your hormonal system. So that's one. The next is powerlifting when it's done 5 days a week. There's a reason why you see a lot of powerlifters only train 3 days a week, because it is the most brutal on your body and on your joints and your CNS. That's why doing it 3 to 4 days a week is way, way better from a hormonal standpoint and a recovery standpoint. And in the bodybuilding world, for a long time, we tried to like start to cross them and mix them. So you'd see people train 5, 6 days a week. Squat, bench, deadlift was the main platform that they trained their base their training on. And their CNS was just getting shot. And sure, we can throw deloads in there. We can do all these things we can. But what I'm telling you, then you start matching dieting in with physique enhancement, and you're seeing CrossFitters and powerlifters training all this time. Now they're in a caloric deficit, and it's all these things. The third and least likely that we'll see, but the cardio fanatics. And we just don't see a lot of that here on the podcast. There's people that love cardio. Hey, whatever makes you get up and you're excited for the day, that's fine. But people are doing tons of spin classes, trying to train for a half marathon or a marathon, and you're trying to work out in the gym, like all those things, cortisol is elevated through the roof. So those are the three that I just see the most issues with.
Yeah, absolutely would only agree with that. You mentioned here something about cortisol robbing. I'd love for you to explain what exactly you mean by that, or how that relates to cortisol and stress.
Yeah, so let's talk about what starts to happen with the hormones in your body. The word I put robbing in quotes, you'll see in the show notes. It's not necessarily robbing, it's just when cortisol is chronically elevated. So now go back to our stress bucket. It's completely full, maybe it's overflowing. Your body has to make, remember, cortisol is a hormone. So your body has to make more cortisol all the time, every day, because it's chronically high, right? So when it has to make more cortisol, it makes less testosterone, it makes less progesterone, which is very important for females, because that affects your ovulation, that affects your sleep, that affects, I mean, it's so crucial. It can affect estrogen, it affects thyroid hormone a lot. Like we see that. So now you're making less thyroid hormone, less testosterone, less progesterone. Your sleep's getting worse. It's a vicious, vicious cycle. And there's a lot of other things that happen too, but we'll kind of focus on those because those are more physique enhancement friendly, especially testosterone and thyroid hormone. Those are the ones most people can at least start to grasp. But for women out there, listen, you don't want to have chronically high elevated cortisol and low progesterone. You do not want, and it starts messing with your cycle. You don't want that. So that's just what people need to understand. If cortisol is high, your body has to keep making more of it. It's going to make less of all the other stuff that you want for physique enhancement and health. Like it's not all about how muscular and lean we are. It's about health, right? Especially for a female. So like from a coaching standpoint, we need to be very aware of these things, especially when we're working with females. You know, I just had a young bikini competitor hire me. She's 21. I know her body's resilient. She hasn't been put through the ringer. She hasn't dieted a lot. Am I going to be able to diet her for a show and do the things I need to do with her a lot easier than a female that's 41 years old that's had a dieting history and more life stress? Because the older you get, you know, you compound these life stresses, right? Yeah, it's going to be a lot easier to diet her for a show, but I still need to know going in. I need to do the things, and we'll talk about how to at least try and manage some of the issues with hormones. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that you mentioned, hey, this is an important topic for everyone, particularly also when it comes to health. And I think a few simple ways that we can quote unquote test if our cortisol is too high. And I mean, most of the time we're gonna like instinctively know just by feeling like super hyper all the time and not being able to downregulate. But yeah, I mean, cycle, your regular cycle is somewhat of a report card for us women, where we can just see like, are my hormones overall, of course, it doesn't give you a specific thing on in terms of cortisol, but are my hormones overall in check? And the other thing also in the sense of, when do you feel alert and when do you feel super tired? Like if you wake up and you feel groggy, you're super kind of like
Yeah.
you do need those 2, 3 cups of coffee to get going. But then at night, when it's time to hypothetically go to bed, you feel like your mind is racing, you're just like going through your to-do list, you can't go to sleep. This is called tired and wired. That's also a very good indication that your overall cortisol curve is off, because you're supposed to be alert in the morning, and as the day goes on, you're supposed to be getting more tired. Or then another thing would be like waking up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and you're not able to go back to sleep
Yes.
consistently. We're not talking about like one night a month or so, but if that happens all the time, those are, in my experience, some easy to spot sort of indications that something might not be right when it comes to your cortisol. But yeah.
You're 100% spot on. And I know when we do an even deeper dive on this, we'll talk about 4-point cortisol tests. We'll talk about cortisol and blood work, which is kind of one snapshot in the morning. But you nailed it. I'm so glad you brought this up, because it's for other people, they'll know it is their circadian rhythm's off, right? So like cortisol should go up in the morning. It should tell your body, hey, start to wake up here. So when cortisol goes up, blood sugar also goes up, right? So that's what should happen in the morning. When you get a 4-point cortisol test, it shows cortisol should be up in the morning, and then it should start to tail off, and it should be very low at night. Because if cortisol is high at night, you're not going to sleep very well. So it should go up in the morning. It should tell your body, hey, here's a little bit of blood sugar, here's some energy. Wake up, let's get the day going. And then at nighttime, that's back down to normal and lower. Blood sugar shouldn't be elevated, and your body is prepared to now go to sleep. And that's just the way it's made to work. Tired and wired. I like that term. That was me for probably about 15 years until I started to get this fixed within the last couple of years. I took a lot of pride in staying up late until 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would get all my work done late because that's when I felt great. And honestly, it was the abuse of caffeine that led to most of mine. But just being an entrepreneur and just trying to be type A and just run, 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 got to be successful. And I would sleep, and then when I'd wake up in the morning, even though I get 8 or 9 hours of sleep, I'd wake up, I'd be super groggy. So what do? You reach for caffeine to try and knock the grogginess off. Got to get up, got to go, go, go. And when you start to get things fixed, which we'll talk about, it all switches around, and it's much better, and it's much healthier. Because chronically, although easy for me to say, chronically elevated cortisol leads to a ton of other issues. Insulin sensitivity is the next one I think that we have to start to get into. And I speak on this a lot. So back to what I was saying, when cortisol is up, blood sugar goes up. Here's what people need to understand. When blood sugar goes up, your body has to secrete insulin to get that blood sugar down. As time goes on, this can lead to people being pre-diabetic. If it's not in check, type 2 diabetic. We see a lot of people that are very high stressed individuals. Their blood sugars are higher on their blood work. Insulin's going to be higher to drive it down. And what happens is your body has these insulin receptors. And when blood sugar is high and insulin stays high to try and drive it down, these receptors just get beat up over time, which means you have to secrete even more insulin to do the job because the receptor starts to downregulate, which means you get all these issues and you see people become pre-diabetic. But also from a fat loss standpoint, people that are highly stressed are like, why can't I lose on 1200 calories? I'm doing everything perfect. It's because your blood sugar and your insulin are elevated so high, your body's trying to burn through that, and it's not burning through fat as easily. because insulin blocks fat burning to some degree. Not 100%, like it doesn't work like that, but it's going to block it. It's going to make you have to go even lower calorie than normal. And that's how hormones can impact the difference between just saying, well, hey, if you cut 500 calories, you'll drop a pound of fat a week, you know, calories in, calories out. So anyway, from an insulin sensitivity standpoint, it can lead to all types of things. Diabetes, honestly, heart disease, the biggest contributing factor is insulin resistance, which is tied to stress. You know, people think of like, well, you see a lot of type A people, they die from heart attacks. Well, it's all these things that lead to a heart attack, right? It's not, people aren't stressed out and their body just snaps and breaks and they have a heart attack. It's what it's doing inside the body, which we'll do a deep dive on heart attacks at some point and cholesterol and stress. But hopefully people can understand like how serious this is when we're talking about it.
Yeah, I think I mean the fat loss resistance for you and I, that's the things that we spot the easiest, or the weight loss plateaus as well. I often get women to start coaching, or women start coaching with me, that are like, no matter what I do, I can't get rid of my lower belly fat. I think that that's where it usually shows up. I'm very, you know, the easiest when we're like, especially the lower belly fat is so stubborn. Why is it exactly there so stubborn? Well, it makes sense from a survival perspective too, right? Your body's main job is to keep you alive, number one. Number two, to reproduce, and therefore it's going to keep that fat mostly stored around your organs or your reproductive organs. So
Yeah.
that's why lower belly fat and it is so associated with cortisol. And one of the first things we start noticing as we're going into the protocols of, like, you know, reducing cortisol and making sure that it's not chronically elevated, usually is that lower belly fat that it's finally letting go. You might be doing less exercise, eating more foods, you know, just doing some calm practices, whatever, and then suddenly somehow your lower belly fat starts melting away.
It's such a fascinating topic, and I'm glad that we're starting to understand it more. So really, the last 5 to 6 years, the physique enhancement community, bodybuilding, what have you, we've started understanding it at scale more, and there's more education going out. But there's always new people coming into the space. There's new coaches. There's people listening to this that they're just starting to diet, and maybe they're later in life, or maybe they're young, but they didn't understand it. Hopefully this really kind of opens it up. And we're going to talk about other things, you know, what to do to lower cortisol and how to fix it. And there's still more to come on the show, but I can envision people listening to this and the light bulb going off, that aha moment, like it did for me. And that makes me happy that this is a probably my favorite topic to talk about over everything.
Well, 100%, and especially if we're coming from that, you know, rudimentary understanding of like calories in, calories out. So then learning on top of that, right? Yes, that is the basis, but now taking cortisol into consideration and what is going to happen if that chronically does stay chronically elevated. So, like, how does that lead to metabolic resistance? Maybe you can kind of explain that a little bit.
Yeah, I gave kind of a small snapshot into that, but the main thing is going back to what I said, when cortisol is very high, your insulin blood sugar, they're going to be higher. So like Lisa, if you were dieting, just throw a number out there. Say you were dieting on 1600 calories, no problem at all, losing a pound and a half a week. And you did that this year and you're fine. 3 years from now, you wouldn't be that much older. You'd be what, like 35 or something like that 3 years from now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I'll be 37. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So say your stresses were a lot higher. You're still training the same. You even have more muscle, but your stresses and your stress bucket are higher. And your cortisol is high. Your blood sugar and your insulin are high. Now, when you go to diet on 1600 calories, and if I were coaching you, I'd be like, man, this isn't working. You'd be like, hey, I don't know what's going on. Like, I can't drop. So now all of a sudden, we got to take you down to like 1300 and you lose a little bit. And then it's like boom, a hard stall again, and you're like, hey, I'm so tired, I am so fatigued, I'm only eating 1300 calories, I'm very hungry, I'm cranky, and I'm like, we got to drop, like you're stalled. So now we drop you to 1200, maybe 1150, and finally we get you to where you would have gotten on 1600 or 1400. That's because your body has to burn through the extra blood sugar and insulin, but that's one tiny part of it, right? So weight loss resistance, you're dealing with that. Remember, when you're making more cortisol, you're making less thyroid hormone. So guess what? Thyroid hormone is basically a snapshot of your metabolism. So now you're making less, probably less total T3. Now your metabolism's even slower. So now you pair it with that. And that's why you see people that, they have hypothyroidism, which is a very slow thyroid. You see their TSH is, pretty high. Like I've seen them at four, fives, and sixes. Like that's very high. Those people, it's very hard for them to lose body fat because they have a sluggish metabolism. So it will cause that. I'm not saying it'll cause hypothyroidism. It will, but it causes it to be slower. So you're dealing with that. And finally, if your testosterone is lower when you're 37 versus where you are now, you have less testosterone, you're going to recover less. So then your training and your cardio, you're less recovered. Cortisol stays even higher and it drives that stuff down even more. So it's a vicious, vicious cycle. And your sleep is probably going to be worse at 37 than it is now. So it's one of those things that becomes so hard. That's why all these experts and these research, and I'm best friends with some of the best named researchers on the planet. Bill Campbell, Brad Schoenfeld, like I can name people and they get it, but there's a lot of other people in their industry. They're like, you guys don't understand the law of thermodynamics. Like you have to be at a deficit and you will drop. Well, no shit. Like we all agree you have to be in a deficit. The truth is you have to be in a lower deficit than what you thought. That's how it changes calories in, calories out. And that right there shuts the door on the whole discussion. And I would gladly, we would donate to charity. If somebody wants to come argue with that, if you're a researcher out there and if you want to send this to somebody, if you want to argue that on stage, we'll charge $100 a person. We'll get that done and we will donate it to charity and we will shut the door on this whole discussion because you can't argue with that. This isn't a concept I came up with. I don't have a dog in the hunt. That's just the way the body works. So if you're a researcher out there saying that or an Instagram influencer, you're wrong. Like you just don't understand how the body works. And that I get hot. People can tell I'm a little annoyed because you can't just tell people, oh, it's just calories in, calories out. You suck as a coach. You suck as a client. You're cheating on your diet. Like, no, that's because they don't know what they're doing. So hopefully
Very
that
good.
makes sense for everybody, at a
Yeah, and
level
so
that
I guess
makes sense.
I of course, yeah, I hope so too that people kind of understand the whole picture, but I do want to give some practical takeaways in the sense of, right, how do we lower cortisol
Yes.
now? Like, what would be your main strategies in the sense of where to attack?
Probably the most important part of the show. Okay, so now we've gotten to the point everybody kind of understands what's going on. Well, how do you fix it? Well, guess what? I own a supplement company. Lisa, you're part of the company. We're not going to throw a bunch of supplements at you guys. Supplements do help. They're a part of this. They can help, especially when you're pretty bad. But you have to fix everything the root cause. You have to address it at the root cause. You can't just throw supplements at everything. Like you can't throw supplements for your adrenals when your adrenals are fried. You can't just throw a recovery supplement at them. You have to address why. You got to lower your caffeine. So, from a stress standpoint, you've got to look at all the big ones that are filling your bucket and you've got to think, okay, what can I do to get cortisol down on some of these things? Training, the number one thing people don't want to adjust is their training because we all love going to the gym. For me, it sets my day up for success. I check that box. I feel good. Like everybody feels good after they train. You should. We love it. And that's what we do. And we look good. And it's part of who we are. So to drop that from 5 days a week down to three, people freak out. And I can tell everyone listening firsthand, and it doesn't matter. It's going to go one ear. And actually, everybody listening, if you put your hand over your left ear, I'm going to tell you why. Put your hand over your left ear. Now, listen to what I'm going to tell you. And if you're watching on YouTube, this is comical, right? Hand over your left ear. If you drop your training from 5, 6 days a week down to three, I've seen my clients look better after 4 to 6 weeks. Okay, take your hand off your ear. Lisa, do you know why I had everyone put their hand on their ear?
It doesn't go out one ear and come out
Yes,
the
exactly. So hopefully that stuck. But guess what? If you're training 5, 6 days a week, you drop it to three. And you don't train to failure, I would say 80%, train 80% to failure. Like train, like you're gonna feel it in the muscle, get the lactic acid up there. It's going to lower stress. Like that, we have to lower stress. What's the number one thing we can do? We cut our training back a little. It's enough to hold on to muscle. You're probably not going to grow. You're going to maintain. But boom, that's the first thing.
I think,
Cardio. Yeah, go ahead.
yes, sir. I was just going to intersect there with regards to like what we're doing in the training, because sometimes for some people, a small tweak might do also. Of course, like in the grand scheme of things, if you quickly want to lower cortisol, yes, that is awesome. But for some people, it might just be overhauling your training program. So, if you do nothing but compounds and you constantly hammer your CNS with deadlifts 2, 3 times a week and whatnot, maybe switching to more, isolation based exercises in general. And as you were, I'm probably going to get to next, what kind of car are you doing additional cardio? Are you finishing with a HIIT finisher or like a metabolic conditioning or whatever? Take that crap out and insert, if you need to insert lifts, or just even dial that right back down to like 8,000 steps a day, and that's it.
You are such a good addition to this show because I wouldn't have said that. I wouldn't have thought to think about it. And that is perfect takeaway. Adjust your training. Train in the high rep ranges for a few weeks. That's just train, 20, 30 reps. Do some machine work, some cables. It's okay. Just you're still training the muscle. That's a Probably the that's more important than anything is look at the type of training. Let's talk about the cardio. I pull all the cardio out for somebody unless they're training for something they have to train for. Like if they're training for a half
Agreed.
marathon, like all right, you got to leave that in. But outside of that, if weightlifting dominates the exercise for you during the week, drop the cardio out. If you want to take some nice leisurely strolls to like listen to a podcast, walk your dog. Just enjoy the outside nature. I by all means do that. What I'm talking about, don't go hard trying to burn calories and burn fat. Just drop that out for a while, and it's going to let your body recover.
Awesome. Yeah. So I guess that's it on the training, and then kind of segueing into what we spoke about earlier with sleep, prioritizing sleep, making sure getting good quality quantity of sleep. And I think in the sense of, yes, you're currently at that stage where you're feeling super wired at night. So how do we transfer into a stage where you actually want to slash can go to sleep at a decent time? And I think a lot of it comes down to like sleep routine, sleep hygiene, putting your phone away on time, eating not too close to bedtime, and all these good things. But of course, also certain things that we can help out with. And I mean, we would be doing people a disservice if we wouldn't go into supplements also. So maybe we can throw out some supplements that are helpful for, well, A, sleep, and but B, overall just lowering cortisol.
Well, it's one of those things. If somebody's going into a dieting phase, like we can address all these things, but I like to have these supplements in place to kind of help keep people from getting to that point to where everything's just crashing down, right? So we do sell New Ethics Cordis. It's the best cortisol product on the market, hands down. It just is. So 2 caps before bed, it helps lower cortisol, keeps your blood sugar more stable, helps you get better sleep. It's not a sleep aid. It's a cortisol aid. So that's been one that's huge. Pretty much
I
if you're
believe that
dieting,
has ashwagandha, melatonin. What else does it have in it?
it doesn't have melatonin. It's got ashwagandha
Oh,
as
it
the
doesn't.
base of it. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I was going to
It's
mention ashwagandha anyway. I'm a huge fan of ashwagandha for stress management.
yeah, and people need to not use cheap ashwagandha. Theirs has sensoril. I know in Hormone Optimizer, which I'm going to talk about next, we use KM66. Those are all trademark branded. Don't use just cheap ashwagandha you get from Walmart. Don't, because I'm telling you, it's not as potent. But Cordis is mandatory for all my folks that come to me and diet because I want to try and keep their cortisol from getting chronically elevated. So it's an aid. Hormone Optimizer is the other one. That's our best seller. It drops cortisol and it boosts testosterone as a 1-2 punch. And it really helps you keep your test levels where they need to be and free test, but it helps knock cortisol down as well. So Cordis and Hormone Optimizer, those are the two that super important.
What are the active ingredients in the hormone optimizer?
The main one is KM66 ashwagandha and then D-aspartic acid. So like lowering cortisol, rhodiola is also in there for cortisol. It's got some DIM in there for lowering, getting rid of some of the shitty estrogens in the body, boron to boost free T, chrysin to help boost testosterone. So it's a lowering cortisol and boosting test at the same time.
Okay.
For females, there's a really good one, Chaseberry. New Ethics makes Chaseberry liposomal. So what happens is as you diet and you get really lean, cortisol goes higher, progesterone drops. So it just helps keep progesterone up. It helps keep cycles more regular and consistent. It honestly, it helps with bloating and things of that nature. So I like to keep chaseberry in there for my ladies. And then finally, ThyroBoost is something that helps keep your thyroid going. Two caps at meal one is what I like to recommend, and it just gives your thyroid the minerals and things that it needs to make more thyroid hormone and keep it from crashing down as hard. So they're aids
Does
that
that
they.
essentially have selenium, iodine,
Yep,
tyrosine, or something like that?
and some thyroid glandulars in there as well. So,
Gotcha. Okay.
yep.
Awesome. Yeah.
Very, very good product. Seen a lot of lab work where I fixed a lot of labs with those products. And that's pretty much it. It does it get a little costly? Yeah, but they're aids to help you be as lean and muscular as you can be, and to try and prevent as much crash as we can, because it's when all this happens over the course of years, right? And for some of us now, it's starting to get decades. You see more people just have issues later in life when they've got a dieting history, but they've really crashed the systems of the body over and over. And I see it in natural bodybuilding more than anywhere. It can definitely be one of the most unhealthy endeavors that you ever take on. It's got to be done right. And that's why I take my time with people. You know, I'm not dieting people every single year and diet them spring and fall. Like, you can't do that, you know.
Yeah, I think the only, I guess, supplements I'd still throw in there would perhaps be zinc, just to help your body with stress management, immune function, maybe vitamin C as well. In terms of where you notice like stress is super, super high, you could higher you take a higher dose of that perhaps. So those would be the two other things of that come to mind. I mean, we don't necessarily need to mention magnesium or omega 3, which just helps with sleep and anti-inflammation. But I think, yeah, just wanted to throw that in there too. Like, I guess we have a pretty like well-rounded picture when it comes to training and sleep and supplements. Then of course we also need to talk about food diet and what are some strategies there in order to, well, bring high cortisol down
Yeah,
chronically
so
down.
I'm glad you brought this up as well. You know, doing a diet break is extremely important. It's what I just presented on at the charity event in Nashville. During periods of very hard dieting, it's important to have a diet break in there. Honestly, it's important to have a refeed day in there, a higher calorie day. I like to at least get those to maintenance. I don't like to see a lot of high calorie days that are still in a hard deficit. Doesn't really make sense, right? So a day of recovery, and like you said earlier, carbohydrates help lower cortisol. They help with recovery. Carbohydrates boost leptin, which also boosts thyroid hormone in your metabolism. So sometimes when somebody's in a really bad place, the best thing you do is a diet break. So what I do is I pull all the cardio out. They only train twice a week, one upper body, one lower body, train at 80%. And I normally add somewhere like maybe 50 carbs to their diet, which is another 200 calorie boost they get. But remember, they're cutting all their cardio out. So maybe they're burning 100 calories from cardio. So now they're eating 200 more calories. They're not having to burn that extra 100 that they were doing the cardio. And they're not training 5, 6 days a week. They're only training two. Maybe they were burning 300 or 400 or 500 calories during their training. Now all of a sudden, you've taken someone from 1200 calories up to 200 from the food, 100 from the cardio. They're not doing 300, 400, 500. They might be at a 2000 calorie level. You're not going to gain fat. Most of my people keep dropping because what happens during cortisol drops, thyroid hormone speeds up, inflammation drops, water drops off your body, and you just feel better. It just diet breaks are legit, but they need to be systematic. You can't just drop everything and just go to the buffet every day. I mean, it sounds it, you'll want to. Because you'll be so stressed out, you're gonna be hungry all the time, right? But Lisa, I like to do diet breaks. Is there anything that you'd like to add to that?
Just in the sense of maybe like a general population, let's say like someone is a chronically elevated cortisol and their gen pop, then going back to where I was starting, making sure they're eating somewhat regularly,
Yeah.
especially in the case of females, maybe more frequent but smaller meals even. And then also, of course, fine-tuning timing, meal timing around your training. You said, you know, of definitely not training in a fasted window, or like at least making sure we have that post-workout nutrition in place that soon, not because of a quote unquote window of gains or whatever, but more because of cortisol downregulation, and that we soon enough after training consume something, ideally something with carbs to help blunt that cortisol. And I think, yeah, that's really the basic level. I would definitely want to make sure that Gen Pop people also do when they want to lower their cortisol overall. Aside from that, as you know, I'm a big fan of like just lifestyle stuff. So I don't think that that can be disregarded when it comes to potentially some downregulatory breathing post-exercise or before going to sleep, doing something like, you know, even just 3 to 5 minutes of whatever meditation. I'm a big fan of walking, just going out into nature, getting some walks in. So yes, those are things that take time, but in the end, it's gonna help you later be more productive during your other hours. So I'm a huge fan when it comes to those quote unquote lifestyle interventions too.
I like to go walk at night. I do it for heart health, so it's not just a stroll. Like mine, it's zone two. I'm breathing a little bit, but it's 15 minutes, and I do that every night, and I feel better after I do it. But I normally will listen to something that makes me happy, right? So whether it's a podcast, listen, sometimes when I'm just not feeling it and I'm kind of in a shitty mood or something like that, I'll literally go to The Rock's Instagram page and I will watch his videos. Because the guy's just a good human and he's doing good things and it puts me in a better mood. And as hokey as that sounds, we've all got to think about things like that. And then finally, something if someone's like really stressed, like if you're listening to this and you're like, man, well, like a couple times a week, like I will just get stressed and I just feel like my insides are shaking. Do box breathing. Like look up box breathing. It's literally it's you know what, just look it up on YouTube. It'll be a lot easier than trying to listen to it on a podcast. But it's basically one of the most proven tactics with breathing that will get you calmed down and get you out of that fight or flight state, from a sympathetic to more of a sympathetic rest and digest start, kind of a state. So box breathing, it doesn't take long. You can do it for 5 minutes and the results are huge. They're huge.
100%. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I hope we've kind of painted a very conclude or like at least a good overview over cortisol before us doing a very deep dive advanced episode at some point in the future.
Yeah, I just want to thank all of our listeners. Like, we just appreciate you all. If you would, please just share this with a friend. If you haven't left a review, just take a second, pause it, hit a review on there for us, give us the stars. If it's five, awesome. Like, it all helps get the podcast out, it helps with the algorithm, but we're trying to grow this and we have some really big plans this year with content that's above and beyond. So, we want to go as big for you guys as we can. And the best way that you can repay us is just share it, give us some feedback, leave a review, and we really appreciate you guys. For myself and Lisa, we're out of here. You guys have a great day.